turn. But first, we find those rad-sucking outlanders and send them to Davy in pieces.
Mounting his horse, Mitchum walked it to the middle of the roadway, watching the trees for snipers. Nothing was stirring, but he didn't relax. Something was terribly wrong here. He just didn't know what it was.
I want a wreck of the whole area. If they walked away, there'll be tracks. Sergeant, form three teams of five men. The outlanders are still alive, and we will find them.
The sergeant replied with a smart salute.
Yes, sir.
Then a voice shouted from inside the wag.
Hey, there's a pile of flintlocks in here, and they ain't even scratched.
Any ammo?
Sure, lots.
Battle instincts flared, and Mitchum spun in the saddle.
Don't touch those, it's a trap!
But the warning was too late. A sec man cried out as something inside the bus burst into a sizzling chem spray. There followed a small explosion, then a roaring whoosh as flames filled the bus, stretching out the windows and doorways to completely engulf the vehicle in a rapidly expanding fireball.
They boobied the fuel!
Desperately covering his face, Mitchum dropped behind his horse for protection as the hellstorm washed over the group of startled sec men, igniting them like greasy torches. The conflagration consumed the entire area, the growing flames reaching to the trees, and the screams of the dying men seemed to last forever. Pushing their way through the dense greenery, Ryan stopped as Christy whirled to look behind them.
Trouble?
They found the booby trap. I pity them.
Fuck 'em.
Jack smirked, limping along. A tree branch had been cut into a crude crutch, and the teenager was stiffly hobbling along, his face a mask of barely contained fury. Hoisting her med kit, Mildred didn't blame him for being angry. A barrel of shine had fallen on his leg in the crash, giving the teenager a sprained ankle. She had wrapped it tight with wet strips of cloth that would tighten as they dried. Not much, but it was the best she could do. The sprain had to be very painful, but the teenager didn't complain. Mildred had two aspirins she was holding in reserve until nightfall to help him get to sleep. But the more he walked, the worse it would feel.
Hated to use all of my plas in one shot.
J.B. removed his hat to wipe off the sweatband with a handkerchief. Then he set the fedora back in place.
But once the wag was broke, that aced the plan of trading it for a ship at Cascade.
Dean rubbed his sore ribs. Nothing was broken, but he had a lot of painful bruises.
Hope it got them all.
I think we can count on some of the sec men surviving, and that soon these hills will be crawling with troops.
Can stop reporting back.
Jack dragged a thumb dramatically across his throat.
Ace that. We want them to report to the local baron. He'll send out troops to hunt for us, and we'll sneak into the Ville tonight and steal a boat.
Dangerous, but it should work. Surprise will be on our side.
No other options.
They were strangers in enemy territory, with every hand turned against them. Back in the Deathlands, rapid fires offered a man some degree of protection. Here, they were a death warrant.
Needs must when the devil drives. We didn't start this conflict, but by God, we shall finish it.
I just want to leave. Ryan checked the clip in his hand blaster. Not interested in starting a war. Too many of them, and we're low on ammo. I have 12 rounds for the Sig Sauer. 2 mags of 5 for the Steyr.
4.
Jack patted the blaster on his hip.
And lost knife. Sticky fell out window.
3 rounds. And 1 is a black powder reload that might not work.
2. 9. Full clip.
Uzi is out. 6 rounds for the scatter gun.
Fire blast. They wasted a ton of precious ammo in the fight with the stickies. At least they still had most of their food and water.
How much farther to the Ville?
Pulling out a sextant, J.B. shot the sun and did some quick calculations. Then he carefully unfolded a map. Found in a redoubt, it was old and faded, the plastic coating worn thin in spots, but the priceless antique was still readable.
Dark night, I have no idea where we are.
He looked upward to scowl at the sun, partially hidden by storm clouds.
According to my map, we're 1/2 mile in the ocean.
Nuke quakes must have moved the island.
So we're lost.
Pretty much.
J.B. tucked the sextant inside his shirt.
We know the Ville is somewhere close, and to the south. That's it.
Pulling out his compass, he checked the direction.
And the south should be that way.
He pointed.
Toward those big trees with the flower. Hey!
Everybody waited expectantly while J.B. stared at his compass.
There it is again!
What?
Dean craned his neck to see. The armorer showed the boy.
Every couple of seconds, the compass needle flicks to the west. Something electrical that way.
JB looked at the dense greenery to their right.
Something big, and still in operation.
A pulsating magnetic field. If Cascade had an airport before, it could be the ILM beacons for the landing field.
Not south, west.
Jack leaned against a tree and massaged his armpit where the crutch had been rubbing.
It's gotta be close. The atmosphere is so fucked up with rads that magfields can't reach very far. A mile or so at the most.
Very close, then. And the landing field should be far away from the buildings. The Vill may not even know it's there.
Could be a good place to rest.
Jack shot her an angry look, then relented and shrugged. He was a Crip at the moment. Only a stoop would deny it.
Sounds good. Dean, think you can climb one of these and get us a wreck?
The boy studied the mutated oak closely.
Sure.
Dean dropped his backpack to the ground. Tightening his belt, the boy started shimmying up the thick trunk and disappeared into the foliage.
Anything?
Nothing yet. Wait a minute.
The companions drew closer to the tree, hands on their weapons in case of trouble. A minute passed, then several. Their expressions began to turn worried. Christy cupped her hands.
Dean?
But only the rustle of leaves responded. A few colorful birds taking flight from the dense overhang of greenery.
I'm going after him.
Ryan passed the Stire to the redhead. Dropping his backpack, the man grabbed a low limb and chinned himself off the ground, just as Dean dropped through the leaves to land sprawling in the bushes.
Plane!
The boy's face brightened with excitement.
Think I found a plane!
In the air?
Mildred scanned the sky through the holes in the sylvan canopy. It was one of her biggest worries, even worse than a runaway plague. Anybody who got a powered airplane into the sky could seize absolute control of the Deathlands. There were few enough weapons working these days, and nothing that would challenge a skyfighter. Even an old box kite like the Wright brothers made for the U.S. government to use in World War I and some black powder bombs would be enough. Just the threat of death from above would make most Vills surrender automatically. The destruction of the world from the sky bombs had burned a very real fear of aerial attacks into the very souls of the human survivors. Dean shook his head.
No, just caught in the branches. About a mile away. Big one, looks intact.
Useless. If it's visible, it's been looted.
The boy shook his head.
No way you could find it from the ground. Gotta be high to see it. I think.
Even crumbling walls can offer shelter.
An airplane. Same direction as the pulse?
Yes, Dad.
Remember what the trader taught us about crashed planes?
JB patted his empty Uzi machine pistol. The Deathlands warrior almost grinned.
Just what I was thinking. Let's check it out.
Shelter or not, there could be salvage. Blasters, ammo, food, hidden sagely away where nobody would ever find them. Lots of things they needed. The Outlanders started pushing a path through the tangled growth. Groaning softly, White awoke to a pounding headache and the stink of burning flesh. Almost immediately, there was a violent explosion, and something fell alongside the Sekhman with a thump. As his vision cleared, White saw it was a dead Sticky with a gaping hole in its bleeding chest. The mutie worked its suckers a few times as if fighting for life, then went still. Hastily scrambling away, the Sekhman drew his blaster and scanned the area for more of the muties. There were none, but he gasped upon seeing the smoking remains of a huge explosion. The bus was spread wide open, resembling a metal flower that had been set on fire. Thick black smoke from the chassis was curling high into the overcast sky. The charred remains of Norms and horses lay strewed across the asphalt, many of the bodies in pieces as if torn apart by wild animals. After a moment, he realized it had to be from their ammo pouches detonating when the men were set on fire from the explosion. Cooked alive, then blown in two. Black dust, what a bad way to get aced. Wasn't even quick.
A bastard trap. Triple damn those Outlanders, I'll make them pay.
Over here!
Spinning, White cocked back the hammer on his big flintlock. But only the dead were in sight. Skins burnt black, hair gone, and clothing reduced to a layer of ash over the charred remains. Then he noticed a smoking blaster being waved from behind the sprawled body of a cooked horse. Approaching carefully, the Sekhman went around the chilled animal to discover Colonel Mitchum on the ground, his legs pinned under the beast from the knees down.
Get this off me!
Yes, sir.
White grabbed the reins. but as he pulled, they broke apart, the leather straps severely weakened from the firestorm.
Get a long blaster. Shove it underneath and I can drag myself out. Hurry! My legs went...